We really ended up with a sisterhood of a cohort. So we all call each other sisters. And we had a private Facebook group in which we could talk, share, laugh, and vent about anything and everything. And so because of that, like, you know, we've been really supportive of one another in the whole process. And it just made the whole program special.
From UW Tacoma, this is Pod Defiance.
Welcome to Pod Defiance, where we don't lecture, but we do educate. I'm Eric Wilson Edge. Today on the pod, a conversation with Dr. Amy Maharaj. Maharaj is one of the 10 members of the inaugural Muckleshoot cohort in the School of Education's doctoral program in educational leadership. This Indigenous-centered cohort is a partnership between UW-Tacoma and the Muckleshoot Indian Tribe. In this episode, we talk about Maharaj's life. Born in Fiji, Maharaj and her family lived through a coup on the island. The family later relocated to Canada. Maharaj struggled in school, but eventually found her footing. We talk about the impact education has had on her. We also discuss her decision to pursue a doctoral degree, as well as her experience in the program. Amy Maharaj, welcome to Pod Defiance. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, Eric. It's great to be here.
So I think the first thing I want to talk to you about is why did you decide to pursue a doctoral degree?
Yeah, thank you for that, Eric. So I've always known that I wanted to go as far as possible with my education, and that was for a number of reasons. So the first reason being was that I barely graduated high school, and one of my biggest memories is my high school guidance counselor saying to me, maybe you shouldn't pursue college. So back then, that was super embarrassing because she had also said that to me in front of my friends, and I didn't have the best grades either. So when I started college, I was also first generation, and I had a lot of low self-confidence, and this was due to my experience in high school. So I ended up going on academic probation, not once, but twice. And so I had to take a couple of years to just recollect and build confidence in myself again. And so when I re-entered college, I was actually hyper-focused on succeeding and just learning how to utilize resources available to me. And I actually ended up graduating with a 3.96 GPA, which I never thought would happen. And so I just had to believe in myself and not give up. And so, like, if you had told me, the teenager in me, that I would be graduating with a doctoral degree, like, I would not have believed it. And secondly, I wanted to do what my parents never had a chance to do. So my parents were married as teenagers, and just being the eldest of their families, they both had to drop out of school at a young age. So by age 16, my mom was married to my dad and helping take care of his 8 younger siblings. And so, you know, they had a tough life, especially my mom. But, you know, my mom was also born a Kshatriya, which stands for warrior caste. So I truly believe my mom is a warrior. And so for myself, I was born in a rural village in Fiji in a farming community. And so when I was 4 years old, we had a military coup. And so that's when the government was overthrown. And like one of my earliest memories of that is hearing my dad securing our windows and doors and getting like steel metal bars put up on our doors. And so we were like really lucky that we also had so many dogs. And because of that, like we weren't robbed, but like our neighbors were. And I still remember like the screaming. And my dad also owns our local village grocery store. And so he donated all the food we had. So it was just a very chaotic time. And so like when I reflect on that, like it's crazy to think that my son is currently 4 years old. And when I was his age, my family was going through this military coup. So it was a very scary time. And as soon as we got a refugee status to go to Canada, we essentially like left everything in Fiji. And so my parents had to start all over with limited education. And I know that they sacrificed like so much to make sure that we had a safe life. And because of that, like I never felt like quote unquote poor, because I always had my parents and siblings. But as I've grown older, like I can reflect on the strength they had to endure all of those hardships. So I just remember that my parents always told me to get an education since I had that opportunity so that I can live a better life than they had. And my dad always had a saying of always make sure you stand on your own two feet. So he really emphasized being independent and living life to my fullest potential. And then thirdly, I wanted to use my degree to help underserved communities. So I think that's the basis of like where my heart work comes from, because I myself am from one of those communities. And so I love to see people flourish and grow more than anything. And currently I'm unsure like what capacity that will be, whether it's through writing grants or creating programs or resources or something through an educational institution. So that's currently what I'm working on.
So how old were you when your family moved from Fiji to Canada? And then what led them to move, I'm assuming, from Canada to the States, I'm assuming somewhere in Washington. Can you fill in that timeline a little?
Yes, for sure. So I was about 6 years old when we moved to Canada. And so I didn't go to kindergarten. I went straight to first grade. So in Fiji during that time, the schools weren't open. So I transitioned directly into first grade. And actually, my parents are still in Canada. So we went to Canada. It's this kind of a long story, so I'll try to put it in a nutshell. They went to Canada and we were there in refugee status. And so we weren't technically allowed to stay there. And so we applied to Australia. And so we're able to get a visa to go to Australia, where we went for a couple of years. But we ended up going back to Canada because during the time we were in Canada, my eldest sister, who was 21 years old at the time, got married to a Canadian citizen. So she ended up staying in Canada and we were in Australia. And so my family really wanted to stay together. So her and her husband sponsored us to come back to Canada. So we ended up going back to Canada.
How did you end up in the U.S.? Because you're here.
Yes. Well, that's kind of a long story too. So I got married really young at age 21. And my ex-husband at the time is British. So I moved to England with him. And then we stayed in England for a few years. And then he was given a job opportunity to come over to the States. And I said, yes, for sure, because, you know, we'll be closer to my family and whatnot. And so that's how I ended up coming to the States. And I've stayed here since. I love it here.
You are truly a global citizen. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. So I mean, at the time, like since I've moved around so much growing up, I had a hard time with it. But reflecting back, I appreciate it so much because it's just given me so much experience and like let me experience the world basically.
Let's come back to the program for a minute. You know, there's any number of doctoral programs in the world. What led you to choose this one specifically?
Yeah, so this one, so in a nutshell, it was a manifestation. So going back to when I was doing my master's program, that program wasn't exactly what I had envisioned. It was kind of dry and lacked culture. So when I was working at Muckleshoot Tribal College, I was looking at on the internet, you know, looking at different doctoral programs. And I came across Dr. Robin Minthorne's profile. So she had just started working at UWT at the time. And so I decided to email her and introduce myself. And so after a few email exchanges, we talked about how amazing it would be to have an Indigenous cohort with primarily Indigenous professors. So Dr. Minthorne came over to the college to have a meeting with myself and Dr. Denise Bill, who is the Executive Director of Higher Education. And then shortly after, Ashley Walker and Dr. Michelle Montgomery were also heavily involved with the creation of the program. And Dean Rachel Endo was really supportive of everything. And so in less than a year, the program was created and it made history because it was the first doctoral program that took place at a tribal college. So it was just amazing to be able to work with such a strong team of women.
You know, I forget that you were one of the folks who helped create the cohort. So I think that's interesting that you helped create it and then were a student in it.
Yeah, I think it was actually a huge benefit because even though, like, you know, I was part of the process and there's many hands involved in the process of getting the program created, I could always give the student perspective. So I can always give an opinion of, actually, I think maybe class time and this time would be better, or, you know, just to give my opinion as a student in the cohort, I think was actually really beneficial.
Okay, so you're done now, well, 99.9% done. You've got some little edits to make, it sounds like, to your dissertation. So looking back, so what was good about this experience, and maybe what was a little more challenging for you?
Yeah, so I would say the biggest challenge we had was that we didn't plan for COVID to happen. So, I mean, not that anyone did. And so this made our program mostly online via Zoom. So it was a bit harder to build those connections online. However, we really ended up with a sisterhood of a cohort. So we all call each other sisters. And we had a private Facebook group in which we could talk, share, laugh, and vent about anything and everything. And so because of that, like, you know, we've been really supportive of one another in the whole process. And it just made the whole program special. And most of us have met since then. And we'll all officially be together at commencement. And we've figured that, like, we'll always be connected as sisters. And I think the fact that COVID happened pushed us closer together in a way. And then the other great thing was just the professors and the leadership we had in the program. I mean, it was just amazing how everything came together so well and how smoothly it happened, considering that we were a part of a pandemic.
So, you know, you're going to graduation. So what does that mean to you to have this degree, you know, to be walking across that commencement stage? You're a doctor now. Yeah. What are you thinking? What are you thinking about in terms of that process and the impact it has on you?
Yeah. So it's a huge time for reflection for me. Just kind of thinking about, like, where I started in my life and where I currently am. Like, if you had asked the little girl in me if I would have become a doctor, like, I would not have believed it. And so, yeah, it'll basically mean the world to me. So I'm also excited for my son to see me graduate. So I have been working on degrees with him since I was pregnant with him. So all he's known from me is that my mom goes to school. So I just want him to observe and see that his mom follows her dreams so that he knows he can follow his as well. And I also did this, you know, for my parents, as their sacrifices basically made me soar. And I'll always be grateful for that. And then also, like, thinking of my ancestors. So during the British Raj, my great-great-grandparents were brought to Fiji as slaves to work on sugarcane farms. So I know that will be with me as well when I cross the stage.
Have you had an opportunity to talk to, like your family, like your siblings and your parents about this? And have they talked about what that means for them to see you get this doctoral degree?
Yeah. So my whole family is very supportive of me and they're very proud of me. So I did my defense yesterday and afterwards they're just calling me and we just kind of talked about, you know, like where we've come from, basically. You know, we were just from a tiny little island in the South Pacific and just like this little farming community. So it is pretty amazing, like where life takes you.
So here's an annoying question. What's next for you? I'm thinking sort of like short term in the next few months and a year or so, and then maybe long term. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's what I'm asking myself too. So I think I am going to take some time to do some side projects. So one of them is actually finishing a cookbook for my family, getting all of our family recipes together, because we have a very unique way of cooking. So it's like an Indo-Fijian way of cooking. So it's different from traditional Indian foods and also different from traditional Fijian foods. So it's kind of a fusion. And so I thought it'd be really cool to get like finish getting all of our family recipes together and maybe get that printed. And then maybe just work on some writing, whether it's journals or publications, just writing something or maybe even grants. And I also want to continue working on my side candle business. So I've always felt that I need like a creative outlet. And so I really enjoy making candles and I use it to make profits to donate to pediatric hospitals. So my son, he was in NICU. And so since then, like I've always wanted to raise money and awareness for pediatric hospitals, especially St. Jude's. And yeah, so I'll just be working on creating my own doors to open and kind of figuring out different ways to give back to community.
So do you know long-term what you might want to do?
Yeah, I think I'm leaning towards becoming a full-time professor potentially. I know that I really enjoy teaching. I like connecting with students. Looking forward to or continue decolonizing the curriculum. So yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards as my future goal.
The music you're hearing is by UW-Tacoma Associate Teaching Professor Nicole Blair. Be sure to like and subscribe to our podcast. You will find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Pocket Casts.